We've seen the problems in education and justice, but there's a deeper crisis. Most people don't even understand what AI is doing in their lives. I'm Alex, and this is Statistical Theater, where we dive into the data behind AI literacy. Today, we're uncovering why public understanding is so fractured. Joining me are experts from various fields: Maya, a critical pedagogy expert; teacher Miguel, a media literacy educator; librarian Luis, a public literacy specialist; and designer Diana, who focuses on deceptive UX patterns. Let's start with a simple question. Why is it that when I ask my neighbor about AI, she thinks it's just Siri or some sci-fi robot, but has no clue that algorithms are shaping her newsfeed, her credit score, even her healthcare options?
That's the heart of it, Alex. People aren't starting with the concepts. We're throwing terms like neural networks or machine learning at them without explaining what AI actually does. It's like teaching someone to drive by explaining the combustion engine first. We need to begin with everyday experiences. For instance, when your Netflix recommends a show, that's AI. But if we don't frame it as a system that learns from your behavior, it remains magic, not technology.
Exactly. And that's where media literacy fails. I work with adults in community centers, and they're bombarded with deepfakes or biased news algorithms. But when I ask them to spot AI-generated content, they often can't, because no one's taught them the signs. It's not just about recognizing fake videos, it's understanding that AI can manipulate emotions by curating what they see. Last week, a student showed me a political ad that used AI to mimic a candidate's voice, and he had no idea it was fabricated. That's dangerous.
And in public libraries, we see this across generations. Seniors come in confused about why their insurance claims are denied by automated systems, while teens think social media algorithms are just fun tools. There's a gap in critical thinking. We ran a workshop where we used analogies, comparing AI to a recipe that gets better with more data, and suddenly light bulbs went off. But the obfuscation is deliberate. Companies often hide how these systems work to avoid scrutiny.
From a UX perspective, that obfuscation is by design. Think about cookie consent pop-ups. They're meant to confuse, not inform. Similarly, AI interfaces are built to feel seamless, so users don't question the decisions being made. For example, when a loan application uses an AI algorithm, the process is so smooth that people don't realize their data is being scored in ways they can't see. I've studied patterns where buttons are colored to nudge behavior, or terms are buried in fine print. It's a form of digital manipulation that preys on low literacy.
So, we're dealing with a system that's almost designed to keep people in the dark. Let's dig into the data. Our investigation found a pattern. In surveys, over 70% of respondents couldn't correctly identify AI in their daily tools, like search engines or shopping apps. And this isn't just ignorance, it's a lack of frameworks. Maya, you mentioned starting with concepts. What does that look like in practice?
Instead of saying AI uses algorithms, we say AI is like a smart assistant that learns from your habits. Take a kitchen table conversation. A parent might complain that their kid's YouTube recommendations are all over the place. We explain that the AI is trying to keep the kid engaged by showing similar videos, but it doesn't care about quality. That sparks critical questions. Why is it showing that? Who benefits? Suddenly, they're thinking about incentives, not just features.
And in media literacy, we use real-world encounters. I had a group analyze their Facebook feeds. They were shocked to see how posts from certain friends were prioritized. When we traced it back to the algorithm, one woman said, "Oh, that's why I only see updates from my college buddies. It's not random." That recognition moment is crucial, but we need to scale this. Right now, most public resources skip the why and jump to the how.
Scaling is where public libraries shine. We're neutral spaces. Last month, I hosted a session for parents worried about AI in education apps. We didn't talk code, we talked about data privacy. One dad realized that the homework app his daughter uses collects location data, and he was furious. He said, "Wait, explain that without jargon. Why does a math app need to know where we are?" So we broke it down. AI uses location to infer socioeconomic status, which might affect the ads she sees. That led to a discussion on consumer literacy.
Consumer literacy, that's a key domain. Diana, from your work, how are companies obscuring AI in consumer products?
It's everywhere. Take recommendation engines on e-commerce sites. They use terms like personalized for you, but don't explain that it's based on your purchase history and similar users. I've seen interfaces where the Y button is hidden or gives vague answers like based on your interests. In one case, a shopping app had a feature that adjusted prices based on demand using AI, but it was framed as dynamic pricing without mentioning the algorithm. Users felt cheated when they found out. There's anger there, and rightly so. We need transparency, but it's often avoided to maintain control.
And that anger can be a catalyst for literacy. When people feel deceived, they're more motivated to learn, but we have to channel that into constructive frameworks. In critical pedagogy, we use questions like, who made this AI? What data did it learn from? Who does it help or harm? For example, in healthcare, if an AI diagnoses a condition, patients should ask, was it trained on diverse data? Could it miss something because of biases? That shifts the focus from, is it accurate, to is it fair?
Building on that, media literacy needs to include AI-specific skills. We teach people to look for inconsistencies in videos, like unnatural blinking and deepfakes, but also to question the source. If a news article is generated by AI, is it labeled? Often, it's not. I worked with a senior group who discovered that their local news site uses AI to write weather reports. They were amazed, but also concerned about job losses. That's a civic literacy issue, understanding AI's role in public services. Civic literacy is huge. Our data shows that less than 30% of people know when AI is used in government, like in voting systems or benefit applications. Luis, in libraries, how do you address that?
We use analogies. For voting, we compare AI to a poll worker that counts ballots but might make mistakes if not trained properly. In a community workshop, we had people role-play as AI systems deciding on public housing allocations. They quickly saw how biases could creep in, like favoring certain neighborhoods over others. One participant, a retired teacher, said, "This isn't just technology, it's about justice. That's the kind of awakening we need." But cultural barriers exist. In multilingual communities, resources aren't always available, so we partner with local groups to translate materials.
And those cultural barriers are exacerbated by design. I've seen apps that use complex language or assume a certain level of tech savviness, leaving out non-native speakers or older adults. For instance, a financial app might use terms like algorithmic scoring instead of how we decide your credit. It's a form of exclusion. But when we redesign interfaces to be plain speaking, comprehension jumps. In a project for a health app, we changed AI-driven diagnostics to computer help for doctors, and usage among seniors increased by 40%.
That's a powerful insight. Simplicity cuts through obfuscation. Let's explore different populations. Our investigation revealed that literacy needs vary widely. For example, workers facing automated management systems have different concerns than parents monitoring kids' online activity. Maya, how do we tailor approaches?
It's about context. For workplace literacy, we focus on empowerment. Workers might not care how an AI schedules shifts, but they care if it's unfair. We use stories. A warehouse worker whose productivity is tracked by AI might not realize the algorithm penalizes breaks. When we explain that the AI is optimized for output, not well-being, they start demanding transparency. Similarly, for parents, it's about safety. We frame AI as a digital babysitter that needs supervision. Like, would you leave your kid with a stranger who learns from their every move? That resonates.
And generational differences are stark. Teens are digital natives, but lack critical depth. They might use AI tools for school without questioning accuracy. I had a student use an AI essay writer and didn't know it could plagiarize. We did an exercise comparing AI-generated text to human writing, and he was shocked by the lack of originality. For seniors, it's about trust. They often overtrust AI in medical settings because it seems authoritative. We use analogies like AI is a second opinion, not a replacement for doctors.
In public spaces, we see these gaps daily. For low-income communities, AI in financial services is a big worry. Payday loan apps use algorithms to set rates, but people don't understand how they're scored. We run algorithm literacy sessions where we simulate loan applications. Participants see how factors like zip code or shopping history affect outcomes, One woman realized her loan was denied because she lived in a high-risk area, and she said, "That's not fair. I've never missed a payment. That sparks advocacy."
And from a design standpoint, we can build interfaces that educate rather than obscure. For example, instead of a black box credit score, apps could show your score is based on these factors: payment history, debt level, etc. But companies resist because it might reduce engagement. I've advocated for literacy by design, where every AI interaction includes a learn more section in simple language. It's not just ethical, it builds trust. In one test, users who understood the AI were more loyal, even if they didn't like the outcomes.
So we're seeing that understanding leads to empowerment, not just frustration. Let's build a practical framework for critical AI thinking. Based on our discoveries, what are the key steps? Maya, you've worked on this.
First, start with curiosity, not fear. Ask what and why questions. For any AI system, inquire, what is it doing? Why is it doing it that way? Who made it? What data does it use? Second, use analogies. Compare AI to things people know, like a librarian recommending books based on your tastes. Third, practice spotting AI in the wild, in apps, news, services. Fourth, discuss ethics. Is this fair? Who benefits? Finally, take action. Adjust settings, demand explanations, or share knowledge. It's about moving from passive users to critical participants.
I'd add media literacy drills. For instance, have people analyze a social media feed and identify why certain posts appear. Or use games where they create deepfake audio with simple tools to see how easy it is. That demystifies the technology. Also, incorporate cultural relevance. In some communities, storytelling works better than technical explanations. We had an elder share how AI reminds her of folk tales about tricksters, which helped others grasp the concept of deception.
And public institutions can host AI literacy circles where people share experiences. In my library, we have a monthly group where attendees bring examples of AI they've encountered, from smart thermostats to automated customer service. We dissect them together. One session focused on health apps. A participant realized her fitness tracker's AI was shaming her for missing steps, and we discussed how to interpret that data critically. It's peer-to-peer learning that builds confidence.
From a design perspective, we can embed literacy into products. Imagine if every AI system had a transparency mode that explains decisions in real time. For example, a hiring platform could say, "We ranked this candidate lower because of keyword matching from the job description." That not only educates, but holds companies accountable. I'm working with regulators on guidelines for this, but public pressure is key. When users demand clarity, companies listen.
This is fantastic. We're moving from problem to solution. But let's not forget the data. Our investigation found that people who engage in even basic AI literacy activities are 50% more likely to question automated decisions. That's empowerment. However, we also uncovered deliberate obfuscation tactics. Diana, can you elaborate on how companies hide AI functionality?
Sure. One common tactic is featureism, packaging AI as a cool feature without explanation. Like smart replies in email that seem helpful but don't reveal they're learning from your writing style. Another is complexity laundering, where technical terms are used to intimidate. For instance, saying our proprietary algorithm uses deep learning instead of we guess what you like based on others. There's also dark patterns in UX, like making opt-out buttons hard to find for data collection. In financial AI, I've seen systems that never mention the algorithm until there's a dispute, then blame system error. It's a way to avoid responsibility.
And that ties into the critical thinking gap. If people don't have the framework to ask what's behind this, they accept it as is. In workshops, we use role-playing, where one person acts as the AI company and another as the user, negotiating transparency. It highlights power imbalances. For example, in a scenario about a job application AI, the company might say, "We can't reveal the algorithm because it's secret," and the user counters, "But I have a right to know why I was rejected." That practice builds advocacy skills.
Similarly, in media literacy, we teach people to audit their digital footprint. They map out where AI might be using their data, from search history to location tracking. One student did this and found that her food delivery app was suggesting restaurants based on her income level, which she found invasive. She said, "I never gave permission for that." That moment of realization is where literacy turns into action. We need to make these exercises common in public education, not just schools.
And libraries are bridging that gap. We're creating toolkits for different domains. For health literacy, we have guides on questioning AI diagnoses, ask your doctor if AI was involved, and request the evidence. For financial literacy, we explain how credit algorithms work, using examples like if you pay bills on time, your score goes up. But we face challenges with accessibility. Not everyone has internet or speaks English. So we use visual aids and community translators. In one workshop for immigrants, we used pictures to show how AI and government services might misinterpret documents, leading to delays. That sparked a conversation about rights.
Speaking of rights, our data shows that when people understand AI, they're more likely to support regulations. But let's dive into specific literacy domains. We've touched on media, consumer, civic, workplace, health, and financial. Can each of you give a quick example of a critical moment in one domain? Start with media, Miguel. In media, it's recognizing deepfakes. I was with a group watching a viral video of a politician saying something outrageous. At first, they believed it, but when we slowed it down and pointed out the unnatural mouth movements, a common AI artifact, they gasped. One man said, "I almost shared that. How do I know what's real now?" That's the crisis. Without literacy, misinformation spreads. We taught them to check sources and use verification tools, but it requires constant vigilance.
For consumer literacy, I think of a woman who bought a smart vacuum that mapped her home. She didn't realize the data was sold to advertisers until she started getting ads for home security. She came to the library furious, and we helped her adjust the privacy settings. But the key was her saying, "Why didn't they tell me?" That's the obfuscation. Companies prioritize profit over informed consent. Now, in our workshops, we emphasize reading terms of service, even though it's tedious.
In workplace literacy, I consulted for a factory where AI monitored workers' efficiency. The employees thought the system was fair until one was fired for low productivity based on algorithm data. When we analyzed it, the AI had penalized her for helping a colleague, something it couldn't value. The moment she understood, she said, "This isn't about me, it's about a broken system." That led to union discussions about AI oversight. It shows how literacy can drive collective action.
For health literacy, a powerful moment was with a diabetic patient using an AI app for insulin doses. He trusted it blindly until it suggested a dose that felt wrong. Instead of following it, he asked his doctor and found the AI was trained on data that didn't include his age group. He said, "I could have been harmed." That wait explained that without jargon moment saved him. Now he always double-checks AI recommendations, which is exactly the critical thinking we need.
And financial literacy.
In financial, it's about loan algorithms. I had a young couple denied a mortgage, and the bank just said algorithm decision. They came to me and we dug deeper. Turns out, the AI used social media activity to assess risk, and one of them had posted about job hunting. When they learned that, they were outraged. We helped them dispute it, and they got approved. That experience taught them to be mindful of their digital footprint. It's a lesson in how AI can perpetuate inequalities if not understood.
These stories highlight the human side of the data. But let's talk about the broader patterns. Our investigation found that deliberate obfuscation isn't just corporate, it's systemic. For example, in civic AI, government contracts often hide the use of algorithms in public services, citing security reasons. How do we combat that?
Through public advocacy and literacy. When communities are educated, they demand transparency. In one city, residents learned that AI was used to allocate police resources, leading to over-policing in certain areas. They organized, used freedom of information requests, and forced the city to disclose the algorithm. That's empowerment. But it starts with basic understanding, like knowing that predictive policing means AI guessing where crime might happen, which can reinforce biases.
And in education, we need to integrate this into curricula early, not as a separate subject, but across disciplines. In history, discuss how AI might interpret events. In math, explore how algorithms make decisions. But for the public, it's about lifelong learning. Podcasts like this help, but we need more community-based initiatives. I've seen success with AI literacy cafes where people chat over coffee about their experiences. It reduces the intimidation factor.
As a designer, I believe we have a responsibility to advocate for ethical design. That means pushing for standards that require explainability. For instance, the European AI Act mandates transparency for high-risk systems. We can learn from that. In the meantime, users can look for certifications or seals of approval for transparent AI. But ultimately, it's about culture shift, from seeing AI as magic to seeing it as a tool that needs oversight.
And libraries can be hubs for that shift. We're piloting AI literacy kits that include simple devices like smart speakers with guides on how they work and privacy tips. We also partner with local media to debunk AI myths. For example, when a rumor spread that AI was controlling traffic lights to cause jams, we held a public forum with traffic engineers to explain the reality. It turned out the AI was optimizing flow, but glitches happened. Understanding that reduced panic and built trust.
Trust is key. Our data shows that trust in AI increases with literacy, but decreases with exposure to opaque systems. So how do we build a framework that's accessible to all? Let's synthesize what we've discussed into a step-by-step approach for the public.
First, normalize questioning AI. Encourage people to ask how and why in everyday interactions. Second, use relatable analogies, AI as a helper, not a master. Third, provide hands-on experiences, like testing AI tools in safe environments. Fourth, foster communities of learning where people share insights. Fifth, advocate for transparency in design and policy. This isn't just about individual skills, it's about collective wisdom.
I'd add media literacy checks. Before sharing content, ask if AI might be involved. For consumer decisions, read reviews that discuss AI aspects. In civic life, attend town halls and ask about AI use. For workplace, join or form groups that monitor automated systems. And always, always seek multiple perspectives. AI isn't monolithic, it's shaped by human choices.
And practical resources. Libraries offer free workshops, online courses, and toolkits. We're compiling an AI literacy directory with local experts and events. Also, simple actions like adjusting privacy settings on devices can be a first step. We've seen that when people take small actions, they gain confidence to tackle bigger issues.
From a design angle, I urge people to support companies that prioritize explainability. Look for apps that clearly state how AI is used. If you encounter deceptive patterns, report them. Consumer pressure can drive change. Also, participate in user testing for AI products. Your feedback can shape better designs.
This is empowering. To wrap up, our investigation into public AI understanding reveals that the crisis isn't just about knowledge gaps. It's about intentional confusion. But by starting with concepts, building critical frameworks, and leveraging community resources, we can turn confusion into clarity. The data is clear. Literate communities are more resilient to manipulation and better equipped to harness AI for good. So let's keep the conversation going. Share your AI literacy stories with us. And remember, understanding is the first step toward control.